laundry. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
And my sobriety date is June 21st, 1981. I've been sober in upstate New York. And I do have a home group. I'm very active in my home group. The Jaywalkers on Tuesday night, we have a two 10-minute speakers. Then we have a fellowship 15-minute break. And then we have a 45-minute speaker. And then on Friday night, we have a beginner's meeting at 7 o'clock, 7:45, a little break for fellowship, and then we get back together at 8 o'clock, have a closed big book meeting, and you're all welcome. If you're in the Richmond area, stop over. It's a very solution-oriented meeting. It's a very service-oriented meeting, and at first I didn't want to join it because it was very service-oriented. And when you join that group, you usually have a job, you know. And I do have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor today, and she's very active. And we communicate every week, and I see her once a week or twice a week. And it's all good today. And a few years back, I couldn't say that. And like I said, I got sober in upstate New York, and I grew up in Pennsylvania on a dairy farm, and it was very isolated and very cold and very lonely at times, and I didn't know much about God. I knew a lot about material things, and you need to look good, and you need to sound good, and you need not to ask for help. If you need help, you just fake it to you. Nobody notices you're not making it, you know, hopefully. But anyway, I grew in this here home, and there was a lot of drinking and a lot of craziness. And my older sister, she's 16 years older than me. She loves to make wine, and she's a good cook too. But she used to make a lot of wine, and my first experience with feeling that we all had. Feeling different and better, and it was all about feelings, and it was about me being better, feeling better, not doing better, being better. But I got drunk on elderberry wine, on dandelion wine. She used to make a lot of dandelion wine, and I don't know if anybody knows what dandelion wine is, but it looks funny, it tastes funny, but it's very powerful, and I was up in the attic that day, and it was around 13 then, and I remember that drink, you know, and I remember, before that, drinking alcohol, and liking the effects of alcohol on me, you know, just made me feel different, and I always liked the way bottles looked, even cheap whiskey, the bottles always looked good for me, but, so there was a lot of craziness, and when I got older, I went to high school, and, I met a guy at Heart Lake when I was about 18 or 19, and I was just getting out of high school, and like I said, there was a lot of craziness on the farm. There was a lot of dark days on the farm, and my parents did the best they know how, and I have a relationship with my family today. And 5 years ago, I couldn't say that, but today I could say that, like I said, there was a lot of craziness, and I remember going to Heart Lake with my one brother. I was the youngest of five children, and I have two brothers. I have two sisters, and I had two brothers, and like I said, my brother died a year before I came in the program. But anyhow, I went to this dance, and I met this guy, and he was a very handsome-looking man, and he, you know, had a beautiful voice, and he had a really nice job at a TV station in New York City. And where I lived in Pennsylvania was about 2 hours from the city, and he had a very nice job, a very nice car, a lot of material things, you know, and I didn't have that when I was growing up, you know. I don't even know if I had a toothbrush when I was a kid, you know. When I went to the dentist, I usually get my teeth pulled out, you know. It was very primitive where I lived. But anyhow, when I met this guy, I seen he had a lot of material things. But when I went over to his house, he was very abusive to his mother. And my mom said, if someone slaps their own mom or their own parent, they'll hit anyone, you know. And I didn't believe my mom, you know. I thought she didn't know anything, but she, you know, she did have that good insight about that issue. But I did marry this person, get off the farm, you know, and I really never missed the farm, and I never missed the drinking, the craziness, because it just escalated, you know. I really believe I married my mother in a lot of ways. You know, he's very jealous, and he always was wanting and needing, and I did too. So we made a pretty good pair in that area. We always wanted and needed more, you know. It was just sick. It was very sick. And you know, I was in that relationship about 14 years. And like I said, a year before my brother committed suicide. And my mother got really sick, you know. She wound up in the hospital, and she was dying with pancreatic cancer, you know. And that's back then, 25 years ago, it was a very slow and painful death, you know. And I remember going in there, and, you know, she was on her deathbed, and she looked a heck of a lot better than me because, like I said, I was in a very abusive relationship with alcohol. And with my ex-husband, and there was a lot of fighting and abuse, physical abuse and emotional abuse, and it was crazy. And she would look at me and she on her deathbed and say, you know, if you don't change, you're going to wind up just like me. And that really scared me because I wasn't thinking about living like her, but I was really thinking, God, I don't want to die like her, you know, on my deathbed, just hating life and always being miserable, you know, and very jealous and very angry. And anyway, she gave me that blessing, that second gift, to change, you know, not to be in this abusive marriage. And you know, she was the only one in my life back then I remember saying that, you know, you drink a lot. You should watch your drink, you know. And I would say, no, I don't drink that much, you know. And, you know, I would just ignore her for a while. You know, I did take her advice, and I did call up AA, and they said to go over to St. Francis. Was in Binghamton, New York. At that time, I was married, and I was commuting back and forth to Scranton area, to the Poconos, where my parents were, and my mother was in the hospital there. And I did go to meetings in Binghamton, and the first meeting I went to, I called up the center up there for Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was an inner group, it was another different kind of center. But anyhow, I called there, and this man answered, and he said, well, there's a meeting at St. Francis, you just go there, and, you know, he said, bring a lunch. I thought, my God, they talk a lot or something. But anyway, because I didn't know anything about AA. I knew a lot about drinking, and I knew a lot about getting drunk, and I knew a lot about hating and being angry and trying to present myself as being better or less. And I got power out of both of them, being a victim or just being better, thinking I was better than someone else, and not being one of, and not being a child of God, but a child of fear or whatever. But anyhow, I remember him saying that, and he said too that, yeah, and they pass the basket around, and if you really don't want to give, you don't have to give. And you know, for a long time, I was a taker. You know, before I came into the program, and in the program, I was a taker, and you know, I would go. You know, and I like that dear concept that you don't have to give, you know, and you really don't have to give. It's, you know, it does help with the meeting place and the pamphlets we get and so forth. But, you know, I didn't give that day, but I did give for a long time. But anyway, I heard a lot of good stuff at that meeting. You know, I remember this there one man, his name is Eugene, and he shared about killing a little kid on a bicycle, an eight-year-old, a young boy on a bicycle. And it was right in front of my house in Binghamton, New York. And I remember seeing the accident. I remember the little boy flying, and he hit this truck. And I remember seeing a dead boy on the road. And that just, you know, I didn't think it was anything related to alcohol. But I got just sick over that, you know. But I drank more. I got drunk, I remember, that night. But I remember when this young man was talking about that he killed this kid. And he killed this boy because he was drinking and driving. And he was stopped by the police on Conklin Avenue. And... And, you know, he got scared and he got into the police car somehow. I don't know. But anyway, he got in the car and he drove and he killed this boy on a bike. And when I heard that man saying that, it really scared me. It scared me that, you know, I drove drunk many, many times. You know, my ex-husband, he was an announcer, engineer at a TV station and a radio station in Scranton, Pennsylvania at that time, and in New York, too, in Binghamton, New York. And I remember driving drunk up to the radio station or TV towers, you know, I ran into trees, and I remember a pig jumped out. It didn't jump out, but I told my shoes company it did. But, you know, and I had a lot of accidents, and, you know, and my car used to look like a comforter from Pennsylvania Dutch, you know, with all different shades of colors, you know. Yeah, and I remember... I remember this man talking about that, and when I was still married at that time, I remember I really, really wanted to have a child, and we tried fertility and different methods, and I just could not have a child, which is just by the grace of God, because, you know, it wouldn't have been healthy because of all the drinking I did, and you weren't supposed to drink when you're taking the fertility medication, and I was at that time, you know. It was just bizarre. So, by the grace of God, I never had children, but I love children a lot, you know. But I mean, when I heard that man saying that he killed a little boy on a bike, yeah, it just bothered me. It scared me that I could do that, you know. And, I stayed in AA for a long time on that fear, you know. And I remember that man also saying after the meeting, they knew I was new, and I remember that they had a book, and they passed the book around. They called it your AA birthday, and I didn't notice that word AA, that A&A word. So I thought it was your belly button birthday. I put that down, and they looked at me, and they kept looking at me, and they knew I was not, you know, 34 years sober that time. But I remember them passing that around, and I remember afterwards. A couple of people came up to me, and the man, Eugene, he came up to me and he said, you know, you really need to get a sponsor, and you need to talk to your sponsor every day and go to meetings and pray, you know. And I followed his advice. I was scared of him. I don't know why, but I was scared of him. I was scared of men. I was scared of women, too. I was scared of people. And I was scared of God, really. But anyway, how I did follow directions, because, like I said, I didn't want to die a horrible death like my mother was dying. You know, I wasn't worried about the horrible life she was living, that she lived. You know, I was more interested in the pain afterwards. I was interested in the pain. But anyhow, I did get a sponsor. Her name was Elizabeth. And Elizabeth, you know, she didn't go through the big book. She went to a lot of meetings. And I never did the deal a lot at the big book, a page at a time, and going through the steps a step at a time, and learning about the steps. I seen the steps on the wall. You know, I went to step meetings, and they were very good for my emotions. And, you know, I went to a lot of discussion meetings where they talked about a lot of opinions and feelings. And I thought this was a disease of feelings and not of spirit, you know. And I remember going to a meeting once, and Tony Kaye, he was one of my favorite people in AA, and I told him, I go, I just want to learn how to drink safely. And I remember Tony saying, well, you really can't drink safely because you can't even think safely, you know. And I remember him also saying, just treat your brain like a broken ankle and don't use it much and ask for help. You know, and I really didn't know what he meant by that, but I did follow directions, you know, and I know it was God doing for me what I can't do for myself, following directions, even though I didn't understand it at times, I didn't even like them, especially when Elizabeth told me to go to meetings, to GSR meetings, and back then they smoked a lot, and she recommended going with this here man that had fellowship and good program, and I went with him, and he smoked horrible cigars, and I didn't write very good. He would talk and look at you, and it's like weaving in and out of trucks, but I went through anyway, and I followed directions, you know, and I know God was doing that for me, and so I was active that way, and I also got active of joining the noon group. I was only able at that time to go to one meeting a day, and then and that was afternoon at this year's school in Edwell. And you know, the meeting after the meeting was more important to me back then, is the fellowship afterwards and the fellowship before. And I remember Elizabeth always saying, due to 2020, get to a meeting 20 minutes early and get to the stage 20 minutes after, and, you know, help people clean up or help people set up and get to know people, you know, because, you know, I thought I was very shy, but I think I was very just awkward. I just never fit in, especially if I wasn't drinking. And you know, drinking isn't the problem. Living life is the problem for me. Drinking helped me cope with living life. But, you know, so I'm really grateful for all the help I got when I came into the program. You helped me to really love other people at that time. And I did, I started washing ashtrays. I did it defiantly. You know, sometimes I wouldn't dry them. You know, I wasn't very good. You know, I had a lot of resentments. And I didn't even realize it. And, you know, so I stayed on step 1, 2, and 3 for over a year. You know, and like I said, I did the steps off the wall. In a lot of ways, I look back, I had off the wall AA, you know, and just go to meetings to get, you know, to take. And I did that for a long time also. And I fired Elizabeth at one time because she gave me some suggestions and I didn't like them. And I didn't like her for giving me that direction. And she told me to stay away from this one person because this one person did a lot of 13-stepping, and she was, you know, it was just not a good thing. So she used AA as a place to meet available men, you know, and Elizabeth said, you know, that's not a good thing. And Elizabeth always gave me healthy suggestions like don't share all your business at meetings, you know, just generalize a little and try to focus on the topic. And it was really hard for me to focus, even as a kid. I would go to church, and my brother used to say, if you turn around again, God is going to get you. He's going to put you in hell, you know. Because I was always turning around, you know, and always looking over my shoulder because, you know, what I had right in front of me wasn't good enough, you know. So, you know, I did fire Elizabeth for a very short time and went back to her. And because I came in the program in March of 1981, you know, and I got very cocky and careless, and I wasn't following directions, you know, at the end of the 3 months. And in June, I drank, you know, I was dry. I was around the meetings. I was around the fellowship for 3 months. And I remember at my mother's funeral, I picked up a drink, and I, you know, and I crawled back to Elizabeth, and I blamed all of that on, you know, well, it was my mother's funeral. You know, I was always into drama and trauma, you know. You know, and I always was a victim, or like I said, I either was below you or way above you, not one of you. And I remember she said that, you know, you drank because you just weren't working the program. You weren't doing what you were supposed to be doing, you know, and following directions. And I, you know, I'm very defiant. I just don't like to follow directions, and I never did. You know, if you told me not to park a certain side of the church, I would have parked there. You know, it's just being rude and inconsiderate. And you know, I went back to Elizabeth, and for a long time, I used to Elizabeth. She sponsored me for quite a while, but she moved out of the area, and she recommended to get a different person as a sponsor. And then I started sponsor shopping, meeting shopping, and not sticking with one home group, and not doing any service work at that home, in any home group. And you know, I was sober for about 8 years, and I remember just life was getting miserable. So I started using psychologists as sponsors, and that's very pricey, you know, and really they don't relate too well either, you know, and I was just getting drier and just running all over the place, and I remember going back to college. You know, I went back to college in 93, and I traveled for a short time. I'm in the medical field, and I thought, well, traveling would be nice, you know, because I was hating myself. Why don't I travel a while, even though I was taking myself wherever I traveled? But, you know, I traveled for a while, And I just have to be old head. And it wasn't even the traveling. I know I was getting sick and tired of Andrea. And I was getting sick and tired of being a dry drunk and just physically sober. You know, because I wasn't doing service work. I wasn't working with other women. And I wasn't working with a sponsor. You know, I was just calling a lot of people and just running to all kinds of different meetings. And not having a home group and being committed to that home group. And I remember, I went to college. I moved up to Utica in New York, and that's way up in New York, and I went to college for a while, and, you know, and then I traveled for a while, and, you know, I was just, by the grace of God, I stayed sober, you know, physically sober, and that was because the one thing I learned in my early days in AA was to go to a lot of meetings and pray, don't drink. You know, and I did that for a long time, and you could stay physically sober, but I know today, the drinking wasn't the problem, the thinking was, and my reactions to people, and I used to always complain to Elizabeth. I remember getting really annoyed with me at times, and I told her that, you know, if I just had the right position in life, and if I didn't have this kind of position in life, and she said, it's not your position, it's your disposition, you know, it's my temperament and the way I looked at things, and I never knew what that meant until this year I really know what she meant, but like I said, I did a lot of traveling for a while, and by the grace of God, I did stay sober traveling to different states and making good money, you know, having a lot of material things and just having a rotten attitude, you know, and not having community. And I miss community. For me, I need someone I could talk to, you know, and someone that knows me and that could come into my life and they have the permission today to step on my toes instead of my grave, you know. And that's what Elizabeth did to me. And my present-day sponsor does that. And I had many sponsors, and I had sponsors that said, don't worry about it, just go to me and don't drink. You know, and after a while, I just wanted to commit suicide. And back in 2001, I was really in a very bad place emotionally and spiritually. And, you know, and I was living in Virginia Beach at that time, and I was going to a lot of different meetings. I did have a home group because it was a convenient time for me. It wasn't that it was service-oriented or I didn't hear it anyway as being service-oriented because I would go there when I felt like going to a meeting, and I, you know, because I thought I had all this good sobriety, and I had physical sobriety for around 20 years, but not spiritually sobriety, and I would go to different meetings, and go to my home group, especially around my anniversary time, pick up a medallion, you know, get a cake or something, you know, and just brag how many years I had, and use my past, my pain, and hurts as a, I don't know, it was like a badge or something. My how many years in the program I used that as a badge too, that, you know, I'm special and better than you or whatever, instead of looking at quality and not quantity. But anyhow, I remember I was working in nursing homes, and that's what I did most of my career I have today, work in nursing homes and home health. And sometimes nursing homes could be very challenging to the patients and to the staff too, but it could be sad, very sad at times, the way patients are treated. But anyhow, yeah, one day I was just tired of it. It was when I had 20 years in the program, I just wanted to kill myself. And I thought of that, you know, I thought of, why don't we just run into this little bridge between Norfolk and Virginia Beach, and I thought, you know, what if I wind up in a nursing home with bed sores on myself, you know, and that scared me because I didn't want to be in physical pain, you know, even though I was in this spiritual pain and emotional pain, and it was funny, too, a garbage truck went by, one of those waste management trucks, and I thought, you know what, my garbage is getting into everybody else's life, you know, and I remember this one lady in Virginia Beach, Judith. I remember there was something about her that just annoyed the heck out of me. She really plucked my nerves. You know, she didn't have that many years in the program, but she had a lot of days in the program, a lot of days in the program, and not just in the fellowship. And I remember she was very active in her home group. And I remember going to her home group, and it was on a Tuesday night. And I remember it was 12 and 12. And I remember going up there, and I told her, I said, you know, I'm just not doing very well. I'm just a basket case, you know. And I said, I need your phone number. You know, I need to talk to you. Because, like I said, there was something about her that really plucked my nerves. And the truth of it is that she has spiritual sobriety. And there was something about me that just was wanting the spiritual sobriety. Because that's when I get connected with God, you know, and God's children. And not judge God and judge and blame God and judge other people and blame other people for what's happening to me. Anyway, I remember going up to Judith and she said, I'll give you my phone number, but you need to use it. If you don't use it, I don't want to ever talk to you again, you know. And I was desperate. I was really desperate. And I remember her telling me, you know, call me tomorrow morning, and then we'll set up a time to get together. And I did. I went over to her house, and she liked to swim, and she had a beautiful swimming pool. And so we went swimming for a while, and then we had light lunch, and then she got the books out, you know, and I never went through the books, you know. I had 27 years in the program, and I never went a page at a time or looking at what the program is all about. You know, like I said, I knew what the steps were because, you know, I was in the program for some time, and after you read them over and over, and you read them on the walls too, you know what they are, you know, and you know how to look at them and how to read them, but you don't know how to engage in them, you know, until you go through the big book and the 12 and 12. And that was back in 2001. I started really living into this program and wanting to get into some kind of program or some kind of different life because, you know, it wasn't about dying. It was about living. Like, I didn't want to live today like this. And with that hate in my heart, you know, and that there just an emptiness. But, I remember starting going through the 12 and 12 with her, and she does that. She goes through 12 and 12 in the big book, and she wants you to do journals and all that. And I did that for a few months with her, but I got a job up in Richmond. And so I moved up to Richmond, and she suggested that I definitely need a sponsor that I could sit down with and do the program and do the deal on AA and get active. And she also said, I want you to get a home group and I want you to be active in it, you know. And she said, and I want you to thank everybody, you know, if they do anything for you, no matter what. And she said, now, even if it's something that isn't helpful to you, if they took the time to do something, you know, just thank them for it and be courteous and smile. And I never smiled, you know. I remember going to meetings in Virginia Beach, and this guy, Charlie, used to say, Andre, if you're happy and if you're comfortable, well, you know, you need to tell your face that, because I would just walk around, you know, I was like, Lumen, that was a glum lot, you know. I was just very miserable, and she told me that, and she said, and don't worry about loving yourself. Try to love other people and try to see good things in everyone, to see them as God's child, which is hard for me to do, you know, and because I wasn't liking God, so why would I like God's kids? But anyway, I did move up to Richmond back in 2001, in November of 2001, and I remember her giving me suggestions, you know, call up the intergroup office and just get a sponsor right away. You know, and I did. I got a sponsor right away. You know, I called up intergroup, and I got someone that I could relate to, which is a red flag for me. If I could relate to them, there must be, you know, something. Because she was a kind of a lady that likes to go to a lot of different meetings and do a lot of gossiping, and that's why she's a very lovely lady, you know, but I didn't want just physical sobriety. You know, what I needed was that there sobriety where I really feel the presence of God in my heart, and I know that I'm with God when I'm in my prayer and my meditation, and I could realize that today. But anyway, I went to a meeting on a Tuesday night, and I remember my sponsor, my present day sponsor, talking, and I remember talking about she had an 11-step partner back then, and I remember her saying that, you know, she was very connected with God when she did this work out of the big book. And she talked about our big book being a text Yeah, and I didn't ever call it a text. And I remember for many, many years, my big book was in my trunk underneath my spare tire. I don't know why I kept it there. Weird, but I kept it there. And in case I needed it, something, I don't know. And I do need it. But because, you know, that when I bought that book back in 2001, I remember saying, this is like the first Bible. For some reason, I thought of it as an AA Bible, you know. And for me, I think I see more God in it than when I do read the Bible or the Quran or any other holy book for me. But anyway, yeah, I remember my sponsor is Janice, and I remember her talking about doing this 11th step with her 11th step partner, and reviewing her day at night with it. And you know, and you know, it's funny too. Like she kind of like plucked my nerves too, like Judith did. Anyway, and I know, you know, but I know I was desperate. I was very desperate, more so than the first day I came into AA. You know, because I didn't want to live like the way I was living. I wasn't worried about dying. It was the journey to my death that was really irritating me, and more so it was irritating other people. I lost a lot of jobs because of my attitude and my fear and so forth, and a lot of friends, you know, and my sisters and brothers, they didn't want to even talk to me. But anyhow, you know, I did ask her to be my sponsor, and you know, she told me some requirements, you know, and I thought, you're telling me about requirements? Do you realize how many years I'm in this fellowship? But I didn't tell her, maybe I've told her that, I'm not sure, but I remember it was just simple requirements, you know, it was something that probably most everyone in here does, is, you know, meet with my sponsor, once a week to go through the 12 steps, to go through the big book. And I got this back up 1 second. When I was seeing these psychologists, I was seeing a psychologist even at the beach, at Virginia Beach. I remember her saying, she goes to me before I moved to Richmond, she goes, did you ever go through the steps with a sponsor? I go, no, why should I know? You know, it's like, you know, she goes, well, she for a lot of her people that she sees, she said it does improved her life somehow. I go, yeah, well, I don't need my life improved that way. But anyway, I was very cocky then, you know, and still could be that way too today. And I remember her saying, you know, I got to go through the big book with her a page at a time to go through this text. And you know, a text is a book that has information about something you're studying and that you want to develop an understanding and to apply it into your life, you know. You know, she told me a couple other simple requirements. It's like going to 3 committed meetings, consistent committed meetings every week, and having a home group and being active in that home group and start working with other women in the program. And that's a lot. You know, that's too much for me to do. And it's ironic, too, because back then I was going to like 2 or 3 meetings a day because I wanted to feel better. Yeah, and you do feel a little better after you hear a lot of, you know, emotional pleasure. You know, like my life isn't as bad as some other people's life. And so I felt a little better. Like I was always comparing, too, and instead of realizing that I could be of service. But, yeah, and to be active in my home group and to go to 3 consistent meetings a week. And, you know, and I even fired her. I remember going to a workshop like my grand sponsor had, John, and he had like over 30 years. And I remember him saying at this workshop, and like I was just starting to do the deal with my sponsor, and my sponsor couldn't go to that workshop because she went to assembly or something like that. And I remember going there, and I remember Don saying, a lot of people with over 20 years, you know, they might not be going to meetings anymore. You don't really see that many people in AA with over 20 years, which is ironic since the program is 70 years old. You know, and I remember him saying that a lot of people, they commit suicide, either by their hand or by their lifestyle, and that really teed me off, so I fired Janice, I realized that, you know, I am suicidal, I was suicidal, you know, and it was very dark, and two, you know, that the longer I'm doing the deal out of the big book, I realize I was bizarre, you know, and worse than I was ever drinking or early sobriety and pushing God and God's kids out of my life. But I remember going back with Janice and doing the deal, you know, and things just started happening to me, you know. Just life started changing. Life started to make some sense to me. And some good things happened, and well, I guess it's all good. I guess it's my perception. It was all the right things that should have happened to me. But the one thing that really happened to me, and I'm really blessed by that, is that I did get active in a home group. And like I said, my home group is very active into service work, and they do a lot of work with treatment and prisons and with newcomers. You know, our focus is having a meeting that a newcomer could go there and hear a solution, hear hope, and hear positive things about how this program really works by living it and not just working it, you know, because I know I always used to try to work people all the time, you know, and I thought if you work something, you just get paid and leave, you know, and I did that a lot in AA, but and it's all about giving and not taking, and so, you know, I did join my home group, and I do have a committed, two other committed meetings, and I do service work, you know, and it just changed my life, you know, and I do work with other women, and that's a blessing, you know, for a long time. You know, my first 15 or 16 years, I did work with women, you know, but I gave them what I was given, you know, it was the best I had, you know, and today I really believe in my heart that I have a message of hope and depth, you know. I know that people's lives will change for the better if they just follow some simple requirements and follow the directions in the big book. And today I don't keep my big book in my trunk, you know, and I do have a commitment to working with other women and going to treatments or whatever if anyone asked me. And I remember also that, it was hard for me to really adapt to this new way of life. And for me, I think alcoholism is kind of downgraded by just saying it's a disease. I think also it's definitely a way of life, you know. And it's not even the alcohol. It's the way of life, the way I interact with other people, the way I want people to fix me or change me. And just blaming someone for everything in my life. I always blame God, you know, and I got power out of that. And a couple of weeks ago, I just went on a retreat. It was Jerry Elkins. I don't know if anyone knows him. And he did a retreat, and it was at Richmond Hill. And there's a chapel there. And it was just, in the last few months, it's just like my heart is really changing and allowing God to change me and not bring up all this fear and distractions. Because like I said, when I was a kid, I was very distracted, and I would distract other people. Like, my brother used to hate that. but I did find a higher power today that I never had been for the first 27 years in this program. And that's by just working with other women, you know, and working with my sponsor and my sponsorship family. And, you know, I did the first step and the second step. And I never went on my knees to do a third step prayer until I moved to Richmond. And that was just a very good, sweet experience for me, you know. And then doing a fourth step and doing a thorough fourth step. And that took me a long time. And at first I thought I had to be perfect. You know, and my sponsor said it doesn't have to be perfect. It has to be clear. You know, it has to be clear, and you have to see, you know, all the baggage you've been carrying along with you. And I had stuff at my brother when I was 12 years old and 10 years old, you know, just silly things. And, you know, and it took us like two Saturdays to go through my fifth step, you know. And I never did a sixth step until I was 21 years sober. And you know, that sixth step was the most important step in my life. I don't know why, but I know why. Because that dear shell on my heart, that hard wall on my heart, started to crack, and God started to come in. But it was funny, you know, I took the book off the shelf. It wasn't on the shelf, but I took it down and read the five proposals, and, you know, I looked over my my inventory, and I stayed with that book and meditated and prayed for an hour, and I even set the alarm clock. And I remember getting on my knees, and I even chuckled at myself, telling God, well, I want you to take this away from me and this away from me. And I realized, why am I telling God what to do? You know, why am I asking God? You know, it's like, you know, I know there's certain character defects I still have, and every now and then I bump into them, you know, anger or jealousy or being over focused on other people's reactions to me. You know, it's like I'm too concerned by how they look at me, like are they mad at me or something. And one of my AA sisters said, well, you know, if you're not bumping into your character defects, maybe that's, you know, that is a blessing, because maybe you're walking with your character defects and going along with them. You know, so it's a good thing. That annoys me, that when I notice I'm judging someone or comparing myself to them or whatever. You know, so that's a good thing. Yet, and today I realized that I got to do the deal, and you know, I did make amends. You know, and I did go out and make amends, because I used to do that. I did a few fourth and fifth steps real fast once, and you know, not very thorough. You know, like I did this one in 2001, and I remember the one amends I made was to my father, and really, you know, when I had this resentment at my father, because he was abusive, blah, 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 you know, and he was angry all the time. And really, he was doing a job. We lived on a farm. He was a mechanic by trade. He went to college, went to school, and he never wanted to be a farmer, you know, but my mother never wanted to leave the farms, you know, so it was bizarre. But I always had this wall up between my father and I, and I always hated my father, you know, and I always was angry at him, even when we'd go out to lunch, you know, when he was older and I was older, and at least physically older. I always had that wall, you know, I never could look at him as another person. And remember, that was one of the hardest amends I was going to make, and I did make it. But I remember Valerie is my grand sponsor, and I remember her telling me, she said, you guys start making plans to go up there, because he was living up in upstate Pennsylvania, and up in a retirement home, and near the Delaware Water Gap. And I remember going up there in November, you know, a few years back now, and a couple of years back, and I remember going up there, and I remember picking up Eugene, the guy that I seen at my first meeting, and you know, and him and I went up to this retirement home where my father was living. And I looked at my dad, and he had very, you know, red eyes, you know, and he was like a shriveled up old man. And you know, the one thing that my sponsor said that was all my fault is just the resentment I had at him. I never looked at him as a human being, as a sick man, you know, as a hurt man. You know, I always thought he was an evil man, you know, and that was my judging, my, you know, playing God and victimhood. But anyway, when I made my amends, I went to see my dad. Anyway, he was 93. And I remember telling him that I'm in AA now, and that I'm an alcoholic, a recovered alcoholic, and he laughed. You know, he just chuckled. I don't know why he chuckled, but he chuckled. And I remember giving him my 20-year medallion, and he read my medallion. Yeah, and he just started crying, and he said, how could you ever forgive me? And I said, you know, it's not about forgiving. I don't want you to forgive me, and it's not about any forgiveness. Like, I know I harmed our relationship by keeping this big wall up between you and I, you know, and he tried to knock it down many times, but I just, you know, just ignored him and just kept that up. But, and then, you know, when you hate one person, that's what the speaker said last night, you know, when you have hate in your heart, it just affects every other relationship you have, you know. And I asked him how could I make things right with him, and he told me, you know, call me at least once a month and write to me. He always liked to read, you know. I remember him sitting in the bathroom when I was a kid for hours reading Farm Machine magazines, you know. And they were old, too, like he was a reader, I don't know how many times, but, you know. And so I did that, and I remember it just changed. I just, you know, my relationship with him changed, and my relationship with other people changed, but more so, my relationship with God changed. You know, it was like I wasn't demanding God, and I wasn't angry at God, and I wasn't blaming God, you know. And I remember he did pass away, and I remember calling him, and it was like 58 inches of snow up here, so I couldn't go see him, couldn't go visit him. And but I did call him, and I did tell the nurses to go in there because he was in intensive care for a while. And to tell him, he used to call me his baby when I was his kid, when I was a kid, and I remember them saying that he used to respond to that, you know, and just started crying or whatever, you know. And so I'm glad I did make that amends, you know. And like I said, it's you know, I did what he asked me to do. I did call him and I did write to him, you know. And it's funny too, because I know by not doing the deal the way it's written out in the big book, you know, all that hate stays in your heart. And my friend Gene, that went to see my dad with me, he could still see the pain in his heart because he's still physically sober. But, you know, I don't have that hate towards my family and towards my father. And my other men, my other brother and my two sisters, is to call them every month. And for, you know, last couple of years, you know, first year, they never called me back. And I kept telling my sponsor, why do I even need to call them? I tell them to call me back, and they never do. You know, she goes, it isn't about them doing anything for you, you know, or giving you anything, you know. And because, you know, I have more than I ever deserve today. But it's funny. Once I stopped looking at that, and she goes, it's just making amends to them, to call them, to tell them where you're at. Because I would just come into your life and just leave for years and then call you back and expect you to just be just like nothing happened, you know. I'm sober yet, you know, and I'm okay. But today my sisters do call me and they do send me cards, you know. My brother, he does once in a while, but he's just, you know, he drank a lot too. And like my sister that's a year older than me used to be my drinking buddy. You know, she still drinks. And my older sister that is a Googly that made wine, elderberry wine, and she still makes, she used to make dandelion wine. She makes elderberry wine for arthritis, and she has severe arthritis, so it didn't cure it, or didn't change it anyway. She thought it would, but anyway, I do have a relationship with them. And I remember Elizabeth, when my mother was dying, and my brother died a year before that. I remember telling her, you know, why doesn't my family get together more and they love more instead of hating? Because my two sisters was hating my brother that was alive yet more so than ever. And because my mother just like disowned my brother and just was very close to my two sisters, which is bizarre. But I remember telling Elizabeth, you know, why don't they get more loving and caring? And she said, your family they're not in recovery, and they're, you know, they'll never be the Waltons, they'll always be the Walnuts. And, you know, they're still the Walnuts, and I'm a Walnut too, but and that's why I still continually need to work deeper and deeper on my spiritual growth, you know, because I can still get cocky, careless, and complacent, and, you know, those little lies and not doing the right thing. And I thought just doing the right thing is doing the right thing, but I have to be very mindful of what is right in my life, because, you know, I could go to a meeting and take an extra long lunch break and say, well, that's the right thing to do, which is not, you know, if I'm cheating the company, you know. So I have to be very mindful of what's right and what's wrong in my life, and that's why I today definitely need a sponsor, and I definitely need to work with other women, because it's funny, the more I work with other women, the more I learn about myself, and the more I learn about God, you know. And that's one thing, and when I did my thorough fourth and fifth step, I remember having resentment at my sponsor because she said to work with other women, to get to know God. You got to know God's kids, and I don't want to really know God. I was scared of God back then, you know, and today I'm not scared of God, and I do know God, and I know God knows me, you know. So, you know, life is good today. You know, I do have some physical problems like we all do occasionally, and some financial problems like we all do occasional. But, you know, you never see a U-Haul in a funeral procession. All you see is the person. And that's one thing, I don't know if I was sharing it with Lynn, You know, when I went on that retreat, and I just bawled like a baby every time I went into chapel. You know, this, and I told my sponsor was on that retreat too, and I said, I don't know, I'm just grieving. You know, and she said, well, maybe it's forgiveness too. You know, forgiving the, having that forgiveness in your heart of other people, or of, and knowing that God has forgiven you. You know, somewhat overwhelming it was at the time. You know, but it was all good. And I remember Jerry on that retreat saying that, you know, a lot of people passed in his, died in his lifetime, and the one person that passed away was Don, and that was his sponsor, and that was my grand sponsor's sponsor. And he said, you know, he was very, you know, a man with a lot of things in his life. You know, he didn't have a lot of material things, but he had a lot of spiritual things, and he had a lot of love in his heart. And, you know, when you see him or just hear him on a CD, you could sense that love. And he said, you know, and there's other people in his life, and in my life too, that passed away, that had a lot of material things, and they told you they had a lot of material things, and I wanted to know too, but you know, it's for some reason, you know, it's the love that we leave behind, and that people really remember us by, because, you know, my friends that have all that material things, I really don't remember that much about them. You know, but I remember a lot about Don, you know, and like, you know, he said that a lot of people will commit suicide before they even get their 25th anniversary, and, you know, my 25th is coming up, and I'm very grateful for that, and I really don't deserve it, because I didn't do anything to get it, just, you know, shut my mouth and shut my mind up, and I know my mind is a great server, but a lousy master, you know, and so I got to stay out of my mind, and other people tell me, you know, you got to get out of your head and get out of other people's heads, you know. And it's by doing that, it's by working with other newcomers, by calling up people and showing up. When I have a commitment, show up. And I'm so grateful you asked me to come up here tonight. It was very pleasant and very sweet. Thanks.